This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Torture, as a method of extracting information in wartime, is our topic today. Joining us next is Jesuit priest Father John Perry, Orbis author of Torture, Religious Ethics, and National Security. It was the middle of the night, and Father John Perry was fast asleep in the rectory of a church he was working in part-time. He was jolted awake with a bright light shining in his face by two men demanding to know what he was doing there. Father John had the tenacity to challenge their presence in his church. Well, it turned out the two men were local policemen, following up on a suspicion that someone had broken into the church. Father John never did find out how the two policemen entered the church. But looking back on that night, Father John thought if it had been the 1970s in Latin America, he might not have ever been seen again. But others around the world don't have this luxury. And that's what led Father John Perry to write his book. Torture and the threat of have been instruments of war throughout recorded history. The Romans used it. The Catholics used it during the Inquisition. It was a weapon during World War II, and no one can think of state-sponsored torture without considering the coup d'états throughout Latin America in the 1970s and 80s. Argentina is one of the many nations discussed in Jesuit priest and Orbis author Father John Perry's book, Torture, Religious Ethics, and National Security. Father John Perry is also an assistant professor of ethics at St. Paul's College, University of Manitoba, Canada. He discusses with producer Eleanor Ostrinsky the question of what motivates a nation to use torture in a time of war. They begin by discussing the effectiveness of torture to elicit information.
It is interesting how people want to use torture because it will elicit a particular kind of information. And some of the arguments against torture have been that torture does not elicit the kind of information or reliable information that those people who are perpetrating the torture need or want.
I don't like to follow that line of argument. And the reason is that torture has a very long history, legal history. It's well embedded in ancient Roman law. And the reason why it's in law and why it's been there so long is people think it works more than it doesn't work. So if you're arguing that way, the difficulty is that just a lot of history of using torture for interrogations to get questions where you're not sure of the answers, they believe it works. It's a strong, deep-seated belief. And, of course, it doesn't always work, and it's a worrisome thing. And the Roman legislators who promulgated laws around it recognize that it's got a fragile and uncertain side to it. So if we use that without using basically a moral position on it, if we go by whether it works or doesn't work, we won't get an answer. And there will be enough evidence that it might work, especially if we're desperate enough, we'll start using it again.
And so what would be the moral argument?
It's basically the view that the human person has certain inherent rights he or she enjoys, including the right of integrity of their person, which are not negotiable, are not rights that we can allow to be taken away from them. I would argue against capital punishment on the same basis. There's another side to this torture, then. At least in the Latin American thing, was that it was used as a method of state terrorism to terrorize their opponents, to make them so fearful of doing anything in opposition to the junta. In the case of Argentina, they'd come upon a person in a Montonero cell, and they were working with 4 to 5 people. They'd grab that person, begin immediately vigorous torture, hoping to get the names of the others in the cell, before 12 hours elapsed, when after 12 hours, the others in the cell who lost track with this person will disperse. So there was a lot of intensive torture right away. After a few hours or a day, that wasn't there so much, the great urgent need to do that. But often they had broken the person so totally by then that then they had to kill them. The symbolic number of disappeared who never came back in Argentina is 20,000. Towards the end of the history of the junta in Argentina, say, the last few years, their method was to take the tortured and defeated and useless for them people that they didn't want to release into the public again, into airplanes, take them into the air, they'd be drugged, and they would take off their clothes and throw them into the ocean.
And there's actually an account in your book about that.
Yes, it's called El Vuelo. And Adolfo Chilengo is the source of this. He has last year been convicted of human rights abuses and sentenced to 640 years in prison.
But he felt that he was doing the right thing.
Of course he did. He believed that this was a cosmic struggle between good and evil, right and wrong, that he was on the side of the right and the good. And it was a Christian civilization under attack from Marxists, and that they had an undeclared war against the Marxists and communists. It's the Third World War, and it's the Soviet Union taking over South America.
If you're just joining us, this is Voices of Our World, and we're talking with Jesuit priest and Orbis author Father John Perry and his book, Torture, Religious Ethics, and National Security.
Your book is filled with personal accounts of people who have been tortured. There's a story with a Gestapo and a Belgian resistance fighter, Jean Ameris, and somewhere in his account he said, whoever was tortured stays tortured.
That's right. Ameris said later that for him the essence of the pain of torture is not that physical side, although that's huge, is the loss of trust in the world that you have learned to have as you grew up as a little child. When you're really small, you put everything in your mouth and you touch walls and you feel, you move around, and slowly you come to know that our world is a good place, that it isn't dangerous, and that with the first blow, said Ameris, you realize that your trust was misplaced. And then he said they hung him up upside down with his handcuffs behind him, and so all his bones of his shoulders all collapsed and they all broke down. So he's hanging there in terrible pain, twisting around, and they're asking him questions. And he can't even answer their questions because he's in total, absolute, entire pain. He said afterwards, years later, you were never over your torture, that it's the most horrible experience in your life, and that never changes.
So what's going on with Abu Ghraib and these sorts of things where the U.S. is now perpetrating torture in other countries?
I have a lot of strong and negative feelings about what happened at Abu Ghraib because it was inflicted on people who were there by mistake, many of them, and were not thought to be high-risk security sources or have actionable intelligence, as they say in the CIA interrogators. But they were just storehouses somehow. They didn't want to let them go. So they were just there in the night shift, and the one group of people decided to take delight in tormenting them and humiliating them in deeply cultural, antagonistic ways. And it wasn't to do with intelligence gathering. It was very much for the sake of pleasure of tormenting people. It really isn't what I was talking about in the book. What I'm talking about in the book is not perversity or people taking delight in tormenting somebody else, but rather the huge ethical, religious, moral question about whether a community under attack can use torture as one of the methods of interrogation. That wasn't what Abu Ghraib was about. Although the plaintiffs in the case claimed that the intelligence unit had asked them to soften them up overnight before they were being interrogated the next day, but the number of prisoners involved, the piles of bodies, suggest to me that the intelligence people couldn't have been seeing each of those people the next day.
The biggest problem, though, isn't it that torture is actually contagious? In other words, if the U.S. decides that there are certain times at which it can use torture in this current war against terror, shall we say, then isn't it also creating a climate in which torture can be readily used by everyone else?
That's right. The excuses are there laid out for everyone else to do it. I mean, I think in Argentina's case, in 1976, in the first months after the junta, they would have done a few things to break the Montoneros. But you see, it got out of control. You know, I don't think any of them in 1976 had imagined that 20,000 people, they disappeared in a literal sense that they're dead. the contagion is it starts one place and very hard to stop it, you know, once it's got a justification for it. And when do you stop it? And when do you say the war is over? Just before the invasion of the Falkland Islands by the Argentinians, it was so bad that these intelligence people were sort of cruising around in their car, seeing a pretty girl on the road, having a kind of lustful eye on her, going from behind and grabbing her and taking her away just for the pleasure of torturing her and having nothing on her at all. It totally got out of control. And I don't think that the junta, the generals in charge, couldn't agree among themselves how to stop it.
So if the U.S. has started now, where are we going to?
There's a major debate going on, and there's indications that the present U.S. administration are starting to step back from some of the earlier positions they took, especially with John McCain's resolution getting such wide support.
So how was it for you to actually speak to so many people who had been tortured and to some of their perpetrators?
I had a very hard time with it. I got depressed. There's such a thing as vicarious traumatization people go through when they're counseling or studying something and get very close to it. And I think, unfortunately, I went through that myself. And I came to know it when the foreword to my book is written by Adolfo Esquivel, who's a Nobel Peace Prize winner from Argentina, a survivor of torture himself. And then eventually he invited me to a conference near Buenos Aires. I had mixed emotions. On the one hand, I was happy, but on the other hand, I was filled with fear, loathing, dismay, and I didn't want to go. I was afraid to go. And there was no easy reason why. It just was a feeling that came over me. And yet, somehow I went. Down there, I realized it's 30 years later, things have changed. The oppressed are now running the government. Socialists are now in charge. Things have changed immensely and in the positive way in Argentina. So I realized my fears were irrational and misguided, but I did feel that way at the time. You know, basically doing the book, I didn't choose to do it. It was sort of I was chosen to do it. At the same time, it cost me a lot.
Thank you very much for being with us and coming on Voices of Our World. Father John Perry, he is a Jesuit priest, and he is the author of a book called Torture, Religious Ethics, and National Security.
Terrorism, a justification for the use of torture? Email us at radio@maryknoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us. Or you can call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Joanne Vipiewski and Father John Perry are just some of the voices of our world. I'm your host and producer for this week's show, Eileen Bott. Our website is www.voicesofourworld.org, where you can listen, learn more about today's guests and topics, answer our weekly question, or subscribe to our podcast. Please go to www.voicesofourworld.org. We want to thank www.wspeak.com for providing us with the George Bush quote today. To learn more about Mary Knoll or try Mary Knoll magazine in English or Spanish, call 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.